Guys, this is Joe just popping in to ask if you've signed up for your free marketing consultation with MDT Marketing yet. If you haven't, head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, get your free consultation today. Don't do it alone. Find the right partner. Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosted by Dr. Joe Sallustio and Elizabeth Leiba, produced by Elvin Freites, the EdUp Experience brings you the brightest and most influential minds from across the globe via the EdUp Experience podcast. Get ready, get set, let's go. If you're experiencing any level of marketing challenge right now, you've got to ask the hard questions and you need answers. Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your future students? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience and future students will respond to? And are you spending more time building reporting than listening in on what your students really want? All of these questions will get answered when you sign up for your free consultation with MDT Marketing. Head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, and talk to MDT. Don't go it alone. Find the right partner. The guys at MDT, the team at MDT is absolutely amazing. Whether your challenge is the cost of inquiries, your melt, your branding, the bad and incomplete information that come with your inquiries, whatever it is, an audit of your challenges will help your institution, and it's free. mdtmarketing.com/edup. Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience podcast, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. My name is Dr. Joe Sallustio. My co-host, esteemed co-host Elizabeth Leiba, will be here shortly. It always excites me when she comes in after an episode has begun, because then I can use that as a moment to just give her a little bit of stuff. Because I, you know, everybody who listens to this podcast knows how I like to do that. I have turned on my microphone for my guest, which I also have a hard time of remembering to do after 250 podcast episodes. I still can't remember to turn on my microphone, which is pretty pathetic if you ask me. But I have done it today because my guest is that special, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Don Kilburn, and he's the CEO of University of Massachusetts Online. Don, how are you?
I'm well today. Thank you.
Thanks for coming and recording with me. I'm glad we were able to pin you down, my busy friend. You have a lot going on over there at University of UMass Online. Can I say the CEO of UMass Online, or do you always have to say University of Massachusetts?
I think for ease of the exercise, you might just want to do UMass Online. I think that's quite fine.
Good. I've got to save my words here as we go through this podcast, because I think we have a lot of ground to cover. And Don, I do. I've got so many questions for you. I can hardly contain myself, but I do want to ask you first about you. And one sentence that you have in your LinkedIn profile, which of course we at the EdUp Experience, we do a lot of work on LinkedIn. And it's that you have a track record. It's your about section on your LinkedIn profile, and you have a track record of creating innovative, fast-growing companies by replacing traditional business models with new models. Isn't that sentence kind of sum up higher education right now, where we're looking at older business models, needing to look at new business models? Talk to me about that, about what it takes to innovate in an industry that some consider dusty, like higher education.
Well, Elvin, thank you for the introduction, and thank you for looking at my LinkedIn page. It might be the only one today or this week, but I think that there, in general, is a significant amount of disruption going on in most industries. Through a couple of things that are going on. One is technology, and related to that is the digital transformation of industries and businesses. And I think you've seen it in industry after industry, where you have systems and data and delivery being increasingly done through digital means and the tracking of that. And I think that education is is no different than, let's say, healthcare, which is has started that transformation a little bit earlier, or many other industries or endeavors where the world has moved to, you know, both a digital delivery and, you know, an actual larger access to, let's say, education than has been in the past.
So, big question on the table. Talk to me about UMass and Brandman University and that merger, acquisition, partnership. Talk to us and give us the details behind that and why that was such a key move for UMass Global.
So this journey, the journey that University of Massachusetts Online has been on, started about 3 years ago, where the board of trustees decided that they wanted to expand access to education, in particular to working adults and degree completers, who were not being, they were being served by the university and the campuses. We have four world-class campuses and a medical school, but they weren't being served at scale. And I think there was a recognition that there were over 30 million Americans who hadn't completed their degree, and at least, you know, close to a million in the state of Massachusetts, and that there was a real need to think about online in a different way. And I think what, after we did quite a bit of work over, you know, that time period, we realized that we needed to find a different educational model to augment what the university would normally do. And so we went out talking to folks who served working adults. And when I talk about working adults, I'm talking about, could be typically a single mom who's 33, 34, works two jobs, life gets in the way a lot, can only study at home, can't get to campus. And we recognized that there were a number of institutions across, and not many, but a number of institutions across the country that serve working adults and the military in addition, at scale. And what they did was they had things like wraparound services, and they had easier to understand navigation around their courseware, and you could stay at home and not have to make it to campus. And so that led us to having discussions with Brandman University, which was part of the Chapman University system. And Chapman is a liberal arts or school that's going up in the rankings. And, you know, the School for Working Adults, which is Brandman, didn't really fit in with their strategic plan. So we started talking about, you know, should we be working more closely together? And that led to a very deep conversation about the partnership. I'm pleased to announce that probably by the time this airs, we will have closed on our partnership. We will be renaming Brandman University of Massachusetts Global, which will be a private university in California. And its primary focus is to increase access to education for those working adults that that had difficulties completing their degree. And our basic goal is to help people advance their lives through education and get better jobs and advance their families' lives. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying that's how we kind of got to where we are today with Brandman.
It's something to talk about, because when you're servicing students and you're doing it in an online capacity, having those wraparound services, being accessible completely, and, you know, certainly the bi-coastal effort doesn't hurt geographically. That's a key strategic move and one that I applaud. Students still sometimes look to a university within a certain mile radius, but more and more, as you probably know better than I do, Don, students are considering going places that are further away and doing it in an online environment, because today's student consumer, and I'd like to know what your thoughts are on whether the student is a consumer or not, Don, what you think there in a second, but certainly we are getting more used to services being provided to us on an on-demand basis, and education shouldn't be any different, right? You get your Amazon package, you get your DoorDash, get your Disney Plus, get everything that you ever want. You never have to leave your house. In fact, ever, it seems like. We can basically do it as soon as we can teleport as human beings. We won't ever need to do anything, to walk outside. We just beam ourselves right from house to house or place to place. Everything else is delivered to us on demand. Education's moving more and more in that direction in an online capacity. And this is a long-winded buildup. I'm known for doing some of that, Don, but you know, it's important to set the context, because higher ed also is more competitive than ever. And there are less students to be competitive with, that are at least projected over time. And there are a lot of institutions that are doubling down on the ability to recruit in an online space. So talk to me about what it looks like from your perspective on competitiveness, market share, affordability, accessibility. Where's the importance? That's a big question. Start talking and we'll just go from there.
Yeah, so I think I need to unpack it. You said quite a few things. Let me unpack a few of them.
Please do.
The first thing is, I wouldn't say that education is moving to the, you know, to students as consumers. But what I would say is that, you know, there is a lot of thought, especially around these degree completers and working adults, as to what it means to be truly student-centric and student-focused, right? And I think that what you see in these wraparound services, and I might take a second on that, you know, these programs that do better by these students, they do financial aid advising. They try to get you as many credits as you're due, you know, towards your program to reduce the cost and time towards your degree. Tend to have standardized navigation for the courseware. I mean, it's something as simple as you don't want to have a lot of diversity in the experience every time you actually go into a course. They tend to be heavy on an assessment strategy that allows them to see when a student might have difficulty. And, you know, you can actually intervene at that point and make a difference, whether it be a life event or whether it be an educational problem. You want to intervene before you found out the student has actually dropped the program. You know, these are all, I think, you could say they're consumer, but I think they're just really student focused. The other thing that when you begin to collect this data is you can have continual improvement in the educational experience. I remember in my former days at Pearson, we began to analyze. The data reveals interesting things. One time we had an online course, and we found out that the students were really failing what was called chapter or segment 4. And we were real puzzled by that. And actually, we did some research. We finally figured out that it was at the wrong reading level. And so we changed that, and performance and understanding went up. I'll give you another example of the use of data. We did some research on an institution that wanted to find out why students were dropping. And the usual assumption was, well, the students just weren't good enough, or they weren't trying hard enough or something. And lo and behold, we found out that 44% of the students in the institution that were dropping had GPAs between 3 and 4, right? So clearly they weren't failing students. Something else was getting in the way, and something else was happening there. And so I think these are all, being truly student focused is actually taking on responsibility, joint responsibility for the success of those students. I also think, you know, in the future, this will be a much more prevalent model in terms of this kind of student focus for many students. In terms of the competitive landscape, I think, you know, we should continue to try to drive measurable outcomes. First of all, create courseware and curriculum that has measurable outcomes that we can see how we're doing. Continue to drive those completion rates, those performance rates up. I think we should continue to try to increase access. Part of increasing access is making education more affordable. I mean, one of the interesting things about Brammen, soon to be UMass Global, is that they have competency-based education courses, which are self-paced, which are very affordable. And I think they also have some programs with companies such as Disney and Walmart, which again, driving the cost down, increases access to education, giving folks all the credit they deserve for previous work, decreases the cost of education. So You know, I don't think there are any, you know, there are any magic bullets around competitiveness compared to actually industry. But I do think if you actually focus on those kind of measurable outcomes and metrics and build a brand around performance, I think you will do very well competitively. You know, I'd also say that one of the things that attracted us to Brandman UMass Global was the fact that their completion rate, I think the completion rate after 6 years was close to 80%, and the student default rate was less than 5%. And, you know, given that programs that serve this population tend to have students that don't complete at the same rate, those are really good numbers. And I think that that indicates they're doing something right in the educational process.
Now, Don, I don't know if you know this, but and I know you said there's no silver bullet, but a team that booked you here for the EdUp Experience said that you would have a silver bullet for us. So I don't know if that was a setup or if you're just holding back, but just so you know, they said you've got all the answers. So we're, you know, just no pressure at all.
I had a silver bullet, or I do have a silver bullet, or the silver bullet's coming.
I like it. Well, so you talked about brand. You talked, you know, on the UMass, obviously, University of Massachusetts, a well-known brand. It's a university everybody has heard of, or at least if you haven't, you would recognize it if, you know, yeah, somebody said it in a sentence. It's a major university in the United States, however you want to set it. Brand's important, and you're seeing, as you are, let me say it like this, as the for-profit colleges and universities that really owned online education in the early 2000s, let's say 2000 to 2010, you're mm-hmm. seeing the emergence of the nonprofit public universities really command that market share for the online student. There's universities alike, Western Governors, Southern New Hampshire, UMass Online, and now University of Maryland Global. Arizona University goes out and buys for-profit Ashford University to take its step into the online environment. So it's a crowded space, but one that needed innovation and needed that evolution and transition because there's a lot of investment that can be made from a public institution such as UMass. But brand's important, right? When you hear UMass, you will associate that with quality. How important is brand, and how important is brand for UMass Online to set itself in the space, and, you know, for market share reasons, but also for branding, for quality reasons, beyond just you know, the recruitment?
Yeah, I think it's super important. I mean, we've done quite a bit of research on the brand, and I'd say two things. University of Massachusetts brand has a real high quality impression of it across the country. It's even higher as you go internationally. And I think Massachusetts in general is regarded by many as the center of higher education, if not in the country, the world in some ways. And so I think, you know, I think from that perspective, we are certainly going to get recognition as a University of Massachusetts Global, and the brand will actually get us attention. I would also say that we are really responsible for making sure that after you've got that recognition, that you do deliver a really high quality education that lives up to that brand. So there, I think, you know, you need to make sure that you continue the brand and to build on the brand quality. But I do think it will give us quite a jump start, you know, as we move into California and as we move into other parts of the country and begin to help additional corporate clients. I do think people will recognize that as a place that they can trust and know that there's quality going on. I would, you know, the other thing I would say about what we are doing is this is actually a merger of two or a partnership with two not-for-profit institutions, both mission-driven, both mission-aligned. We do not have a for-profit component here. We do not have shareholders. So whatever happens to the institution financially, you know, will be invested back into improving the educational experience or to needs-based scholarships. We like that model a lot. I do think that the for-profits led the way in a lot of innovations, in particular in efficiency and in student services. I think that we have a little bit of a unique experience level here, since we have I came from industry when I was at Pearson. We helped build the Arizona State program. We worked with most of those. So we have folks in conjunction with the model that's out at Brandman that actually do many of those things that help students succeed. And so I think that coupled with the brand is going to make us, I think, quite formidable. And I'm hoping that students will come to us and recognize that they stand a good chance of success by coming to UMass Global.
Well, you're talking about moving to other parts of the country. You're in Massachusetts. We talk about you being a coastal now with Brandman in California. Let me move you just slightly south of Massachusetts to the state of Florida, where my esteemed co-host, Angela, is. We call her Angela when our brand is disrupted slightly when she's not here with me. So we're talking also about brand. I feel disrupted that Angela's come late. But she is here. Angela, welcome to the Out of Experience podcast.
Oh my gosh, that is quite a welcome. And I really appreciate that. I love how your introductions. Hi, how are you?
Hi. I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry you had to deal with Joe for such a long time. I'm here to rescue you and hopefully steer this conversation in the right
direction. I will tell you, Don and his team that are here have been sending me chats. Where's Liz? Where's Liz? When's she coming? Where's Liz? So I've tried not to take it personally, but it's kind of hard.
Yeah,
no, it's great. We actually, Elvin's actually, he's actually answered the questions before we get to the questions. It's great.
There you go. Well, here's the thing. I think that you're probably well aware of this, that all over the country, we're all thinking about how to pivot to online, how to best serve the needs of our students. What are some things we need to do to be more effective? And I myself got pulled into a meeting about those very topics. So I'd love to ask you, because I'm listening intently into this conversation, and I'm so fascinated by your background and everything that you've done in the higher ed and even in the regular K through 12 space, about the idea of partnerships and bringing this, like you said, it's not necessarily the corporate or the for-profit aspect, but bringing these types of collaborations where those of us that are more in the traditional face-to-face educational sphere can learn so much more from powerhouses that have done this so well. What is your thought about how education, higher ed as a whole, can actually benefit and be more effective when we do create these types of collaboration, just based on your experience?
Yes, I would lead off by saying, I think it's a mistake, and people do it frequently. You didn't do it, which is good, but they talk about higher education as this monolithic thing, a singular thing, right? And it's not, if you look at the groups that are served by higher education, there's a lot of different groups that are served. You have your 18 to 22 year old campus-based cohort. You have your 36 year old who's trying to, get an advanced degree in nursing and everything in between. And so I think, as we look at educational partnerships and educational delivery, I think we have to match to some degree the programs and the delivery to those characteristics and those segments. And that's why, again, when I mentioned that we have we're looking at a new model, it's because not everybody can make it to campus. Not everybody can even make it in a hybrid program. Some people need more mentoring and help. The other construct that I find that's helpful is, I think that all of higher ed is on this journey to increase digital delivery. And the way I used to describe it a while ago was, there is complete analog, where you have face-to-face, and then over here you have machine learning, where the machines are teaching, and you have along that line all sorts of places you can be. And so you see many institutions that will have face-to-face and they'll have administrative tools online, or they'll have some grading online. And then you see others begin to actually put lectures online, and others that will actually have more interactive classes, or some will have Zoom. And these are all, I think, on the continuum of that digital penetration. And I don't think it's a straight line that says you have to go from the one side, which is analog, all the way to machine learning digital on the other side. I think you need to find out what students you're serving and then pick your place on that digital line. And I think that's the first thing. To your question about partnerships, you know, I do think that if you are on that journey and you are determining that you have a different student segment that you want to serve, or that you want to actually move along the digital line faster, those partnerships are pretty important. There is a concept in business around innovation, which it's very difficult when you have a certain model that works for a large segment of, let's say, a student population or any population. It's really hard to actually start a different model or an innovative model on top of that, or with that. It's hard to get that to move. And so a lot of the partnerships you will see will be trying to accelerate that innovation and that movement. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's kind of a long-winded way of getting there.
Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your audience? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience responds to? Are you spending more time building reports than listening in on what your audience wants? These are not easy questions to answer. That's why our great friends at MDT Marketing are offering a free audit of your marketing efforts. Head to www.mdtmarketing.com/edup and submit your information for your free consultation today. Look, guys, you got nothing to lose. It's free. I don't know why you wouldn't want a free audit to tell you what you're doing, whether it's effective, and how you can make some incremental changes that can make a big difference moving forward. That's www.mdtmarketing.com/edup.
No, it totally does. And I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I think one thing that has made me actually optimistic when I think about everything that's happened over the past year, as challenging as it has been, is I feel as though that actually accelerated that idea of looking outside and looking at possibly potentially partnering with people or organizations, doing those collaborations. What you said is in terms of moving that needle just a little bit faster. Yeah. How do you think, because this is a passion of mine, and Joe probably told you, because he loves to rant and rave and gush and praise me so much when I'm not around. So one of my passions is social justice and thinking about students that are typically underserved. How do we improve access? What are some things that we need to do to be very mindful of marginalized students, whether they be students that are economically disadvantaged, whether they're marginalized in terms of being first-generation students, whether they're students that are Black or other students of color? How do you feel as though, in terms of the access piece, we can be more mindful of that, the online experience and being aware of the digital divide? What are some of the things, your philosophies in terms of how your school's been able to navigate some of those elements, and what are some advice maybe that you would give for schools that are trying to balance all those key components for our underserved student population?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I happen to think that life gets in the way for a lot of students. And I think that's true for many Black African Americans and Hispanic Latino Americans. I think life gets in the way, especially when socioeconomic situations are put you at a disadvantage to begin with. And therefore, I think, you know, the education that is flexible, affordable, and then support that is actually proactive, not reactive, I think can help. Help to change that. And I think there's evidence that it does help to change that when you have certain programs. I mean, I don't think a program that's taking students that are disadvantaged and trying to help them get across the finish line is going to have the same performance metrics as Harvard University, right? Nothing wrong with Harvard, but but that doesn't mean that you can't move the needle and that you can't actually track performance and continually look at improving performance around retention and completion rates. I think the other thing to think about also is you know, we have, and this is a little bit off topic, we have this notion that you need a, you know, there's a 4-year degree or a 2-year degree. And for many students who are degree completers, they have spent, you know, 3 months, 4 months, life got in the way, they didn't get through. So my other thought is, how do we begin to create competencies and shorter things within that educational degree that will allow somebody, if they have to drop, to get a better job? And, you know, I sometimes have been accused of making things too simplistic, but, you know, I frequently think, you know, for certain populations, if we got a person an interview, a job, or promotion that they wouldn't have gotten, that's a pretty good measure of success for many people, because it does change your trajectory for not just individuals, but families. So I also been thinking a lot about how do we get milestones or gates along the path that actually allows somebody to achieve something that would be recognized as important going forward. But I do think it is part of why we're doing what we're doing. I think the wraparound services should help. I think the coaching, I think there's quite a few things you can do to make a student more likely to persist. And again, these degree completers actually, I wouldn't say have failed once, but they did not complete once before. So you really need to pay some special attention to make them successful.
Don, you did say that you're accused of being too simplistic with things. I will say that higher education, it's a match made in heaven then, because then, you know, because things are so complicated. So that accusation of you will continue on and persist for years if you keep trying to make things, if you keep making things too simple. I'll be honest.
Well,
right?
Yeah. I'm also, you know, I'm cognizant of, you know, I've talked to people and they say, look, I need to, if I get this degree, I get a promotion. And if I get a promotion, then I can do X for my kids. And, you know, you hear enough of those stories, you understand those stories, and you realize how important the work is and how important it is that we take responsibility for success as educators, and that we actually do everything possible to make sure that happens.
That's a dissonance sometimes I feel like in higher ed, because you know, in an industry traditionally that has looked at itself, the industry of higher education is somehow we were serving some other stakeholder besides the student. It was a faculty or it was a research project, and those things still happen. But I think the student is taking more center stage. Right, it's kind of like Elizabeth coming in the middle of an episode. Everybody's got to stop and take.
Absolutely,
notice.
That's what's supposed to happen. Just like with the student, it's student centered. Just like it's Elizabeth centered. It's basically the same thing.
I will.
You understand that now, right? That analogy.
It's taken me about 250 episodes, Liz, but I have figured out that we are centering around you.
Good. Thank you.
Which
I'm just like the student, so you're on the right track here.
Let me serve you, Elizabeth. but truly, like, the student is taking center stage now. It's about servicing the student. It's about providing for the student and the institution being there when the student needs them to be there. Right. That's one of the, I would say that's one of the moments, I don't know if moments is the right word, that we are fumbling and bumbling through in higher ed, is how do we make sure we're there when the student is ready for this education? How do we stay front in mind of that potential student over time and balance that with the student that we need right now? I write a lot about this. I talk a lot about the cultivation versus capture-based marketing, where I need a student for my upcoming budget. I need a student because we're trying to increase population, or we're trying to grow our university and serve more students. But I also need those students a year from now. And I need to balance out how I push my spend, because I could spend all my money right now. I could spend it all later. How do I balance that out? Talk to me about how you measure your performance and maybe what some challenges are. And we all have challenges at our universities, right? In my university, Claremont Lincoln University, ours is simply growth. As a graduate university with no undergraduate pipeline, we certainly have enrollment challenges. It's something that just is with us all of the time. Talk about how you measure your success, Don, and what some of the challenges are that you face that you're willing to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first comment I'd like to make, and this goes back to my not all students are the same, not all educational applications are the same. you know, and it goes to your point, Joe. You know, there are many institutions which are either fully on ground or hybrid, where you have faculty autonomy and faculty, individual faculty governance over a number of things, right? And that works. That works for the institution, that works for the university, and you know, and that's fine. You know, I think that there are some educational, there's some student segments, and in particular, some of the ones that we are talking about today, where you really need to standardize the experience, and you need to have, so you don't want a student, you know, who's 10 p.m. going and trying to learn faculty member A's navigation and then faculty member 2's pedagogy, and it's all over the place. And then you can't really collect data because they all have different ways of collecting data around grades and performance and stuff. So there are some, you know, for certain student populations, there are ways to standardize the experience that would help those students succeed. And, you know, I think that's an important distinction. And I think it's what a lot of universities, as they think about fully online programs, especially for certain student populations, really struggle with. And again, and maybe, you know, maybe they should have a different model. Maybe they shouldn't be doing that and, you know, stick to the hybrid and on-ground programs. But I do think, for me, one of the measures is, are we, you know, we could say, are we attracting, a sufficient number of students, and are we growing, and is the word growing about how successful do we have, are we matching up programs to jobs? I mean, when people do leave, do they get jobs, interviews? Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, for many, and when I graduated, you got a liberal arts degree and then you kind of figured it out, you know, kind of thing. And I think for certain student populations, you know, the luxury of figuring it out, you know, it's like, no, I need to figure it out today. And so, you know, having those programs that are really focused around jobs and, you know, completion into those jobs, or even, or milestones into jobs, better paying jobs and work, I think is important. You know, continuing to be innovative is a milestone. You know, I think that being very flexible around how those jobs changed. I mean, you've probably, over the 250 segments, I hope somebody has mentioned that the COVID dislocation has accelerated the digital delivery, and a lot of campuses or schools said, well, you know, online's no good, or, you know, we're no good at online. and it was a call to action to do something or not. I think the other thing that, you know, I think it's accelerated a lot of trends. I think the other thing that's coming is, and some of COVID's caused this a lot, there's going to be increasing numbers of automated jobs through robotics and AI. And so the hope is that there will be new jobs, and you'll be needing to, you know, retool and train people for new jobs. I hope that's true. And if that's true, as an institution, you need to continue to be nimble and quick enough to actually develop those programs so that people can make that shift as automation takes place. And you can be, and by the way, on that issue, you can be entirely pessimistic or entirely optimistic, depending on your worldview going forward.
Don, do you think it's possible for me to automate a co-host of the EdUp Experience? That's wondering if I can have
a co-host.
You
would never want that. You would be crying.
The co-host just, I say, hey, co-host, what do you think about, what do you think about my questions?
With you?
And the co-host goes, Joe, your questions are so amazing. Joe, thank you for being such a
co-host. You're going to have to get an automated robot.
I mean, it just makes me want to automate things, Liz.
I think you have a special sauce. I don't think that's probably going to happen.
All right.
Thank you, Don. Thank you so much. And you were speaking my language, so let me just really drill down on what you just said. Aside from Joe's hijinks that he's doing right now, Don, I want to pivot back to what you said, which was amazing. And I literally was jotting down notes because I'm like, you were speaking my language about this whole idea of consistency. And I think for a long time in academics, I saw it in traditional, when I went to school, it was more about academic freedom. I think Joe actually alluded to this as well. And the professor just being able to teach their subject matter and having the ability to kind of be the sage on the stage. And I think for students, a lot of times, especially students that are coming from maybe circumstances where they haven't necessarily been as successful. Maybe they've started school somewhere and life got in the way and now they're trying to pivot and get on a focused track. A lot of times that consistency is so key because they're not seeing it in other areas of their life. And when you have a course where you're already a little bit, maybe you're tentative, you're a little afraid of maybe being able to be successful, having that consistency. And I think what you said resonated with me, not having to learn what is this particular professor's pedagogy or what do they want with this or want with that, but having that structure is super important. I was also really fascinated in that philosophy. I love that. But I was also really fascinated by the number of programs that are offered and the variety of programs. What do you say about our ability in terms of online learning or just even on campus, being able to be agile enough to pivot and offer programs and being able to satisfy the student needs and the market's needs? Do you think that that's something where we're having to develop more workforce partnerships? It's something that Joe and I talk about at length all the time, and we're still kind of working through talking with leaders across the country about how can we as an industry, as a sector, be more agile and making sure that we are delivering what the workplace wants and what the students need to be able to be successful. What is your philosophy on that? What have you guys been able to do as far as that's concerned? Because your degree program offering is amazing. So what do you think about that? And how can we kind of across the sector be more effective in that respect?
Well, again, I think it depends on who you're trying to serve and what you're trying to do. And, you know, I think for the university as a whole, having broad programs and research grants and, you know, I think that's wholly acceptable and good. I think for what we were trying to do with the independent university in California, UMass Global, I think the you know, the programs there should be related directly to immediate jobs or workforce needs. And I don't think there'll be introduction of additional programs to do that with. I do think it's in the modern university, resource allocation is difficult. I mean, there times are for many institutions tough around resources, and no one wants to say, let's start this new program over here and let's close this program down over there. And those are really difficult conversations to have around, you know, resource allocation and how to do things. So I think schools struggle with, you know, having, and, you know, plus the new program development sometimes, you know, requires accreditation and quite a bit of faculty review and faculty senate review. And so there's a process that takes some bit of time. I did want to go back to something, you know, that we both, I think, agree about around that consistency of the course. I want to be real clear that I don't think that means that the actual education can't be challenging. I think the education or learning of new concepts can be challenging. We should challenge people. I just think that the things that are wrapped around that shouldn't be hard. You shouldn't make that harder than it is. So you can have real rigor in education. I just think you just ought to standardize it more. And by the way, I would also say that as institutions begin to think about more, I wouldn't say central, maybe more centralization, but more, you know, efficient approaches to things, it might free up additional money to have more programs for student support services. I do think that their schools are looking at that pretty hard, but it's across the sector. You know, I mean, I think the money from the federal government has given people and also the ability to borrow money and on low interest loans has given the industry a couple more years of breathing room, but there's a lot of financial distress out there among a lot of institutions right now. So, you know, having that flexibility and doing those kind of things is difficult in those resource challenged places.
Before I pass it back to Joe, because I know that he wants to jump in, can you also revisit an earlier point that you said about the competency-based aspect? Because that's another thing that Joe and I always speak about, and I'd love to hear what your philosophy is on that, because we think about in terms of the students with the stackable credentials or some of the competency-based elements, it would be so much easier for students if we did that. But why do you think there's so much of a hesitancy to really explore? You said that you think sometimes people think you're being too simplistic. Is it because we're making things more complicated than they have to be? Like, why is there so much of a hesitancy, you think, across the sector to really look at more of those options in terms of stackables or competency-based?
I think there's a bundle of things. I think one, it's not the traditional model that everybody's used to, right? And so how to evaluate that and judge that and actually, with the systems and the review that we have set up, it's hard for people to get their head around. I think it is like many of these things, it's early days. I mean, everybody expects for the new thing, it's going to come out of the box fully baked and performing well. And, you know, anything you come out with new, it gets better over time. I mean, the educational model of face-to-face is, I mean, how many hundreds of years old is that? And it had time to refine itself. And I think that's true for whether it be competency-based or online education. These things are getting better. I do think that self-paced competency-based programs are not for everybody, right? I think there are particular students that need a different model around that. But in general, the idea of stackable credentials, getting rid of the Carnegie units in time, allowing people to move faster, and assessing that, why not? Why not? It just seems to me that open access to education, get people to move through at their own pace in a quicker way and in time, I know it hasn't actually fulfilled its potential yet, but I do think it's one of those things that we should keep working at.
Liz, Don said that if we keep him past the hour, he's going to hang up on you. So I'm going to ask him the last two questions.
But you didn't know that Don and I already scheduled a follow-up, then we're going to be doing actually a separate interview without you at all? They didn't
Joe, that's not true. Actually, I said I would hang up on Joe, that you and I could stay up.
Exactly.
Oh, here we go.
Thank you. We are actually going to have a separate conversation without you interrupting every 5 minutes.
The hierarchy reveals itself here on the Oedipus Experience.
You were copied on that?
Did you forget to CC me again, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I forgot. Sorry.
All right. Well, Don, we've got two final questions for every guest that we ask. And the first is the easy one. Second one, a little harder. You touched on it a little bit. But the first is, what did we miss about UMass Online as the CEO that you want to talk about? Any initiatives you have, things you're working on? I know the Brandman thing is a big thing. Anything at all. What did we miss? And number two, when you're done with that, is what does the future of higher education look like?
In 3 minutes.
Well, that's what I said. If you have to hang up on Liz and stay, that's up to you.
Well, I'll take the first. I think that University of Massachusetts has shown a lot of courage, and the Board of Trustees and the president of the university, Marty Mean, have shown a lot of courage in pursuing a different educational model and, meeting the needs of more students and increasing access to education. And I think there should be a large applause for, a public institution in Massachusetts actually having that kind of courage and doing the right thing along that. So that's, I believe it's going to be wildly successful, but these are not easy things to do for a public institution, and it's not easy to do them the right way either. So I do applaud the university and the state for moving ahead in this manner. The future of higher education.
A lot of pressure on this one. Don, silver.
Not really. I'll just go play the Irish lottery after this. I happen to think that online education, digital delivery of education, is going to continue to grow. I think that the machines will continue to get smarter. I think they'll also be able to continue to help educators. I think that eventually they should be embraced by educators, because they'll help educators help more students to understand concepts and moves ahead. And I think that's just a natural progression. That's going to continue to help. I do think that the, everybody has lots of data. It's a world rich of data, but not as much information. And I do think that there will be a lot more information, usable information in the future that will allow us to figure out where students are succeeding, failing, what kind of interventions we need to do. How do we continuously improve programs to actually get more students to where they want to get to? I also think at some point there will be, for certain students, more short courses. Certainly you see it with, MOOCs who have evolved into things like Coursera and edX. And I do think that there's a place there, and I think you'll see more partnerships with those kind of short course programs and those credential programs for jobs. I also think you're going to see corporations playing a bigger role in the higher ed space. I think they've woken up to the fact that just having educational tuition assistance programs are not really strategic per se. And I think they're looking at increasing skills gaps and retention and promotion issues. And I think they're going to really start thinking deeply about educational partners who can deliver programs that can help their workers move ahead, and also help an institution or a corporation to fulfill its mission better. I know we're working now with Mass General Brigham, the big hospital, on developing programs. I do think that's going to be increasing. You probably talk to some people about corporate education. There will probably be attempts at some corporations doing their own thing. I tend to think those things kind of come and go, but that's just a little cynicism on my part, but there will be attempts at doing that. Other than that.
Well, speaking of things that come and go, Liz, thank you for—
Oh no, I'm here to say, you'll never get rid of me now.
Thank you to our amazing guest, Don Kilburn. He is the CEO of University of Massachusetts Online. Don, it's been a real honor to have you on. I really value your insight and what you're doing in the online space. And ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned for a future episode of the EdUp Experience with my automated co-host, Angela, who will be joining me in future episodes. Don, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
It's been a pleasure.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. And just wanted to remind you, if you have a few moments, head to Apple Podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. Write us a review. Let us know what you think of the EdUp Experience podcast. We are going to continue to bring you the best and brightest and most influential minds in higher education and beyond. Thanks for listening, everyone.